Amor que fue caro, reflejando con el pan que no en el gran hino. Y no quiero estar en su día contra los holidays. Just because we, all those in our house cars are studying the taxes to act as heroes sick and the prevention of disease and pain. Thinking them about our soul, and thus their work, that they themselves may live as members and servants of Christ and give comfort to those for whom he left and died to save. For Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. I think that in a moment, that the special meeting was arranged to have the honor of this question of knowledge to discuss the days of psychotherapy. I'm sure that we're keeping the honor to the honor to the telegraphy here. Perhaps I could explain the reason for the microphone. In fact, we're doing that for the tour. And he asked that his benefit, the bestie, take his head. And he said, if that's an hour or hour, to his fifth class, it's being that his benefit, and we're ready to see what I have to say.
At this amount, I think the courts, the judges and trials, such a retarding technique, and the congressmen, you know, all reserve the right to re-edit their speeches, and I'm told they're going to come out very different in the congressional record, and they're doing the same floor. So I suppose I have to stick by anything I say. This particular topic is loaded, because you can't talk about it without going into all the confusion that exists in the field of psychology. I suppose if you think the number of branches of Protestant religion and meaning are almost duplicated by the number of different theories in psychology. And it becomes very difficult, impossible actually, then to talk without giving your own frame of reference. I shall do my best to make any explanations about any particular theoretical framework that's different from my own. And I can only say that I can't become a very fervent apologist for me, although I can try to be as objective as possible. Now, I'm not a psychoanalyst. The American public, by and large, has been pretty well conditioned in a psychoanalytical framework. And I would say that for the last 10 years, with one or two exceptions, most of the things that appeared, genetic statements by psychiatrists, genetic case examples, you know, Greg Cooper writes up in Life Magazine, the Reader's Digest, the periodicals that reach most people, tend to have a genetic flavor to begin with, and it's certainly true that analysis can lend itself to genetic presentation, although I don't think we can necessarily always hold the analyst responsible for them. But if there are any questions that come up about it, I shall try to briefly touch on as I talk here. But since I'm not an analyst, I can't give you quite the certain defense offense that they might be able to. There are some analysts who do are very interested in public relations work, if you would happen to be, that'd be up to you. Another thing today occur that would be better, and I certainly agree, that to spend about half this time or a little less maybe, making a skeleton presentation, and then letting you bombard me with anything you wish. In this particular respect, we could think about what you want to hear rather than what I guess you want to hear. The psychotherapy implies talking essentially. either the patient or the doctor. In many instances, the patient ought to be more talking than the doctor less. As such, the medicines that we use, the so-called physical treatments, electric shock therapy, insulin, chemotherapy, advanced treatments, are not included in general rule at this time, or they may be combined with it. I think I'm sure you all have a some understanding, and perhaps a great deal, of what the term implies. But cancer therapy is as much an art as it is a science. The message we might like it to be more scientific. And as such, it's subject to all the extraordinary perversions that an art can be subjected to, that theoretically at least, did not enter into account. And the importance of Christian attitude in psychotherapy cannot be overemphasized. And they're probably as important, perhaps, as the content, as what said, that is how it's said, may be as important as actually what is said, or what is achieved. This essentially, as you're aware, a patient presents himself, probably to an internist initially, or to a general practitioner, surgeon. They can do psychotherapy. They, in the sense we've had a talk about it today, it'll be done by psychiatrists. The patient is, as a rule, referred then to a psychiatrist. Because their medical times are changing, more and more patients decide for themselves they need to see a psychiatrist and they can. Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're not. And an ethical psychiatrist will take someone that doesn't need it. Now, a psychotherapist then is bound more or less by his framework. And this is probably very much ministers of different faiths. You don't have a common goal, but you express this and you work through this in five different manners. And it's conceivable that a Buddhist monk and a, they could have a common goal of a given type of behavior. You see, but they might work out of quite different framework. This gets it well out of the United States and anything else. The same thing is true here. I have to mention just a word then about what's available. It isn't all good. And maybe even the best isn't good enough. This I agree with, wholeheartedly. Too many people think just a little bit of psychiatry, or just a little bit of psychoanalysis. Too many people who are skeptical about everything else, look on psychiatrists as the last of the chain, the risk factors. You'd be surprised how prevalent this attitude is, even in places where people are otherwise very intelligent, very well-read. And I suppose it's a bit of the unknown left. There isn't as much of the unknown as there used to be to most people. There's more to people who really recognize it. The physicists, you know, when I took chemistry initially, we had 92 things on the valence side. And that was it. You didn't have to worry once you got down to an element. It was pretty concrete. You could stop things. There was some unknown beyond, but it didn't bother anyone. And now the physicist that has gotten beyond that realizes that for sure he recognizes now the unknown is much greater than did before. This is true of intelligent people as knowledge is unknown. But it isn't so true of people who don't think that deeply. So that today, people know what composes water. It's not unknown. They know the earth's round and have a general idea as to what makes things grow. So that they're denied a great number of superstitions that they once were able to hold to. There's a lot of unknown, 100 years ago. And there still is, for many people, but for a lot of others, things are pretty tense. Everything is pretty well answered. And I think this has something to do with the halo effect that the pastors have been able to attain from this stuff. And the analysts in particular. Because those are the unconscious, the last frontier, And people all too often utilize that concept. Anyhow, it doesn't exist. Anything that's done is not done by any mysterious now that I'm aware of. The two of the things that make a good psychotherapist, as far as I can tell, and this probably includes both analytical and non-analytical, speaking here of analytical former people who do former psychoanalysis or a type of deeper treatment using psychoanalytic terms. Probably included as follows. The individual who will do the best will have some of these qualities or some combination of them. But as in general, he will be confident in styles. Now, it's rather simple concept, rather important. And this is described somewhat naively as a sort of person that, stray dogs take to. A guy who can, dog who's been hit by somebody across the street, and you can sort of win his confidence and get him to better up to you, or you can ride a horse that seems scared to death, something of this sort. But this, of course, isn't just true in society, this is true in the ministry, it's true by anywhere you want in dentistry, anywhere you want to go. You feel a whole lot better if a dentist looks like he knows what he's doing and if he looks like he's putting his first tooth. This is important. It's also important that you have an individual who gives you adequate time. It may not seem like enough to you, but at least adequate. And no matter how great the authority, if he doesn't give adequate time to get a thorough examination, this is harmful. So that oftentimes the expressed or implied is important. And this is merely an extension of expressed or implied. The expressed or implied, you don't tell people you're good or that you inspire confidence. Either do it or you don't do it. It's non-spoken, it's non-verbal. And it's something you size up in everyone you meet. And the patient certainly sizes this up in a psychiatrist. And no patient will leave a doctor or a psychiatrist any quicker than you go on if he's not to have some of this quality. And you can see, of course, how this can be utilized by families. Because there's nothing that the time man has in any greater abundance than what I've just described. And you can see this is quite true. And society is still rather embarrassed by this sort of measurement back in the 18th century, the 1800s. He did a pretty good job in treating certain types of psychoneuroses on the basis of this sort of thing. And a friend who founded the Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy, fell under the care of one of his disciples. And you have a denial, the master's denial situation. But it has its use if it's used legitimately, this sort of thing. So it's easy to see how this can be used in illegitimate fashion. Therefore, nevertheless, these things are quite important. Just because Mesmer is succeeded and the time they succeed with them does not mean they don't have a useful purpose and a legitimate purpose. Because some doctor somewhere takes out every wound he can get his hands on and can come to turn off of each other, doesn't mean that a hysterectomy is always bad. There are indications, there are definite counterindications. If you try to stay within those limits, you'll be all right. As soon as the techniques involved, I'll touch on these rather briefly. that we utilize. This one I've just mentioned is probably the most mysterious, the least documented, the most personal. Because it doesn't matter what school you subscribe to, it's helpful. This is obvious. And it probably doesn't matter what work you're doing, whether it's photography or anything else, if you're dealing with people, the same thing is helpful. So it's not a limited thing at all. But the techniques that are used, and I want to touch on that briefly, it's supportive psychotherapy. And it's not mysterious, it means just that what it says. The second one is ventilation, and the classic example of that is the confession. So the individual is allowed to ventilate or to control his thoughts and express whatever's bothering him. And if he happens to feel like taking his wife, keep him because, you know, if he's going to waste or something, he can say it. You know, you don't encourage him to do it, but you let him say it. And it's possibly a great many things that bother a lot of people that they can't talk about it to everybody or to their friends or to their spouse. So this has its place. It's not a all-inclusive activity technique, but it's important. The third thing is called abreaction, which merely means reliving a previously traumatic experience. So it was emotionally traumatic. And this is the one you saw in the movie 15 or 20 years, a lot of it in the movie 15 or 20 years ago. They give a guy a shot and he relives that combat motion. And that's where the incident is the most useful. It's not a very good civilian, but not a very useful civilian technique. But in people who have been in extreme stresses, such as in a heavy marathon and things like that, and they thought perhaps that they didn't carry their share of the weight in this combat thing, and some of their friends died, and they began to wonder if, you know, is there something like that. We can be induced by certain drugs that occasionally get individuals out of it. But our drugs aren't strictly psychotherapy, it's essentially a psychotherapeutic technique. And it was one of Fred's earlier attempts at treatment, but he didn't use drugs, he did a different fashion, actually using hypnosis. And it is very useful in so-called combat neuroses. It just hasn't found a great deal of success in a civilian setting. But it isn't even very useful in veterans 10 years later who are suffering from the same thing. It's mainly for a very acute thing. And I presume if any of you were in the conference room, you probably have seen something. Interpretation, what I'm going to mention here is going to cover most analytic techniques and a lot of non-analytic techniques. And here, you try to, by usually indirect or subtle means, explain to a patient something he doesn't know about himself, usually an explanation of why he does something, if he's unaware. And this is a really complicated situation that gets into all the nerves of the catacombs of psychoanalytic theory, as well as other types of theory, but essentially analytical theory. The entangled, the concept of the unconscious, and its material that's hidden in there allegedly. It's something that you do with considerable caution, usually. You get a lot of information before you attempt it. You do it rarely. By and large, you don't do it with any degree of finality, or maybe also with a tentative explanation, and the patient will be allowed at that time to choose whether he wants to pursue this, accept it, reject it, anything between them. There are a lot of examples of this, and I don't really need to get into them in a minute, but it's conceivable that in an analytical sense, this would make, I suppose, At a boy of 19, Ed married a woman of 51. And for some reason or another, we've been presented to therapists and this came out. And in this instance, it would have to be something that bothered him, or he wouldn't have brought it to the therapist. Now, if it became obvious that this boy was a very dependent individual, he had never achieved a great deal in the way of personal independence and strength and so forth. He demanded an overwhelming amount of attention and care and mothering. It's very obvious that I've read this example, but it might eventually come to be that it would be presented to this man, you would try to get him to present to himself, but he wasn't really looking for a wife, but he was looking for a mother who lived 3,000 miles away, thinking this way. Now this is, of course, a very rudimentary example, and I don't suppose that anything very complex. But this thing gets really involved, and it's something that is done with by most reputable psychiatrists, is considered a caution. And only after a considerable amount of data has been accumulated, this may come to in fact, an answer. You may go once a day for 50 minutes, 45 days a week, for years. It's not how that is known. To say that this may come after 6 months, and interpretation may come after 3 months, of 1 hour a day, I mean. You see, this is very rarely something that the analyst do the first hour, or the third hour, or the fifth hour. And they can wait because the thing is planned. It's a long-term situation. There are times when if you're very sure of yourself, and you're pretty certain of the patient's defenses, and his ability to handle this, you may do this much earlier if you don't know. That's an analyst move, thank you. Other things that we've covered obviously suggestion, which finds its largest place in the treatment of itself for women. The good majority of itself for women, there's some debate about how many men who say it's an extent of attention. That brings up another thematic problem. I tried to find this, that's a half hour job in itself. Well, I think you have a pretty fair picture probably what I'm talking about. Persuasion is something that is used, and in just a moment we'll go into that a little bit more. Hypnosis is something that is very customized in psychiatry. Freud tried it and didn't think it worked. And very few psychiatrists in our schools use it today. An awful lot of obstetricians and dentists use it. And when my friends ask me about it, I also say it to my dentist because he knows more about it than I do. We do know that some of these feats of hypnosis, where people allegedly remember what happened in their second birthday, are merely something that you see all the time in psychotherapy. And that is an individual trying to please the therapist. I can't prove that diagnosis. I can swear it never happened, but anyone remembers the second birthday. But there's pretty good evidence that a lot of these phenomenal feats of memory that apparently evolve under a hypnotic state are sort of utilized, just a bit of filling in that we do because somebody wants to know, you know, and we don't know, so we give them something. And if you really thought about it, if you've ever had a few beers and somebody really pressured you to know something, it didn't matter whether what you told them was right or not. And it seemed also important to them, you know, it's easy to see how one with just a little bit of imagination could put on a lively first birthday party. So that sort of thing. As far as how much real deep research material one gets with hypnosis, it's not a good deal of debate. And I'm not saying hypnosis is never used, but it's always bad. I don't personally use it, and I don't know a whole lot about it. There are times when you certainly can relieve people, very anxious people with it. But you can also do this other way if you will. Reassurance is a powerful weapon in psychiatry and medicine in general. A great many people with very minor symptoms were returned. So that an individual who has a little bit of a pain in his chest if he's traveling small doesn't have to go to a psychiatrist. He sees his internist and he has his blood pressure taken and he gets an EKG or a cardiogram, one or two other little things, and the doctor says there's a muscle pain. This man wasn't talking a lot, obviously. On the other hand, this is psychotherapy. In a sense, you see, this is the doctor telling him after an adequate examination that it was all right. Now, he may still be a little concerned, perhaps his three brothers have all had heart attacks at this age, there was some reason to be concerned. But if he responds to this, it's obvious that's all the treatment he needs. All psychotherapy doesn't have to be done with pain. So this covers those things, plus a very important thing, I think, and that is re-education. And this is an old hat, and probably not even original with 20th century psychiatry, but it's almost self-explanatory. Where people have problems that don't seem too nasty, too gross, and they seem to be sicker as a result of being some bit of teaching or some taboo. Sometimes you can go in to an individual, and if you have enough confidence in the physician, turn out the origin of the teaching, get the patient to reevaluate the accuracy of the teaching, or whatever it was he was taught, so forth. And in that respect, then eliminate a false taboo or something the individual has decided was taboo on his own, and become quite helpful to his own immediate symptoms. So, very briefly, I'm going over the goals then. And this will take me very short time, what I was brought here to talk about. The first goal of psychotherapy, as I see it, is do no harm. And this is really the first goal of medicine. And it's considered the first goal of any treatment procedure. It's not as easy as it sounds. People constantly pressure you for all sorts of, advice. And if you happen to give the wrong advice and they happen to follow it, you can do a good deal of harm. The second obvious thing, of course, is comfort. This comfort isn't quite in the hedonistic sense of the word, I suppose, but an anxious, ridden, or obsessive, an individual with emotionally engendered pains and aches, tense, what have you, is excessively uncomfortable. You could call it pain, I suppose, which has a little more of a physical connotation. One of the goals is reduce this discomfort in that sense. And that conceivably is the biggest thing of most psychotherapy. Now, the illness do, in a theoretical sense and sometimes in a practical sense, look at a total reintegration, personality-wise. Most psychiatrists don't. And the illness, when they don't do this, they call it analytical psychotherapy as opposed to formal psychoanalysis, where they work more for relief of symptoms. More like you think of any doctor. If you go for a bellyache and you take your appendix out, well, you're glad your appendix out, but you went for the bellyache and you're glad that he took care of that, you see. But this is the way then that most general psychiatrists and the analysts, when they're doing what they call psychoanalytical oriented psychotherapy work. And they do final psychoanalysis, it's a little bit different colored horse, and they do at least strive for a little more in the way of corollary to this is to provide for health. But, and I can very glibly here say that I stand for mental health, to fly the mental health. The only thing is, I can't define mental health. Because I've tried it. And I can't even define mental illness because I've tried that. So it would just be a catchword for me to try to get biased out of them. I don't imagine you'd let me. and caught on that.
This is off the paper. It's kind of thankful about the story, but I feel this is true. There's tremendous talk about not there's something to be kept with. You know, we can't any longer say the terms that our grandparents used, describing people who are not at work. Because these words are not in quite powerful language. And as a consequence, it sometimes takes some of our patients a long time to get around to asking me, do you think I'm crazy or not? Because that's what they're afraid of, but they can't say it. And this is just a textual thing, you know? It's a word that has fallen out of a star. It's just what they're worried about. So I think I can't define it, I can't. Those are essentially the goals. They sound simple. My students are oftentimes very, very difficult to obtain. I'm a cynic as far as results are concerned. I'm not a Pollyanna. There are Pollyannas in psychiatry. They think if the patient just comes to me long enough or often enough, or goes to the right hospital long enough or often enough, he's going to get well. This ain't so in some instances. Don't anybody try to tell you what it is. Deciding which one is and which one isn't is a real problem. And it's one that certainly isn't well defined at this point. Results in cancer therapy are in such a high chance that I would like not to even mention the word, but it's important. I just can't tell you what the results of cancer therapy are. You can, I think, readily see the difficulty in evaluating these results. The way, because one doctor only sees so many patients, and how important is that particular doctor's personality? No matter what he believes or what he says he does. And try to get an exact patient who's not done, nothing is done to duplicate the patient, what we call control. And it's impossible to duplicate patients and control. You can see that some of the difficulties that are faced there in trying to achieve some scientific results. It really can work from there, but as yet, there's not enough real information in society. I'll try to answer any questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Can you
talk
a graduate program into the work at these times. I see some of them are there to implement their service, but I'd like to give them a psychiatric examination. And my question is this, can you tell us of what specific value of a psychiatric examination of whether it's a hospital or a PI is, and is that something that has to be required of all of the members of the graduating class, or of all of the students once during their 10 years here, or of all the faculty members, because as we get to see our dentist every 6 months, and the staff having any assessment.
Okay, I'll
answer
that question.
Okay.
Well,
first
of all,
this is true. Really, I think, is what you're talking about. The same sort of thing that you might ask who should come, the freshman come. No, I don't think it should be required as a matter of routine, even in jest. And its value is like this. I'll give you an example in the Navy. In the Navy, very few people from the submarine service come in a psychiatric ship list. Now, those people have been screened, not only by psychiatrists, but by all the usual methods that you use to screen applicants to your school. If the applicant has been in jail 14 times for drunk and disorderly, it doesn't matter how good his grades, you wonder, you see. So, with psychiatric screening and all the conventional methods of determining future behavior, the submarine service then produces a very low number of admissions per capita of psychiatric service. But there's only one trouble. The rejection rate for the submarine service is so high as compared to the number that apply and the number in the Navy, that we couldn't run a whole Navy like that. Remember, we turned down a lot of good men in the submarine service in order to be selected.
So that the selection takes care. Let's begin with all five in the society service.
You know, you pick the men any way you want to. They have nothing to do with their talk with what they use besides it. So it's true that if you let me stream, or let a group of good doctors, leave me out of here, stream 10,000 people,
they can probably pick you 100 real top notches. I think I could do that. I wouldn't be 100%, but I'd be pretty close.
Now, as a matter of fact, you probably could too, you see. Because what you do is you eliminate 9,900. And you may have eliminated some very good, 9,000 real good ones. And eliminated 800 bad ones, really bad ones. So psychiatric screening is a nice tough proposition. And if you try to get the psychiatrist to do it, most of them will do a real psychic exam. Because as a rule, they don't believe they have that ability. And as a rule, to my knowledge, the best single guide of future behavior, and this one certainly isn't found, is past performance. This is nothing new to you. And I have nothing more to add. There are certainly times after somebody gets, there are some reasons for coming to me, or they're sent to me, and I can say, well, sure, this guy should never have been graduated in second grade. That's easy, but that's hindsight. And you bring this man with 100 others to screen for some selection, and in the first place, he's not motivated, to lay his life bare to me. He wants in for what he's getting in, or he wants to graduate from where he's going to do. He's not going to tell me anything he doesn't want me to know. That's the best answer I can give you. Now, there are some testing procedures that are more accurate to psychology than they are to psychiatry. They probably have more value than a routine psychiatric exam. There you have a situation like a submarine service, so it might be worth trying. Because you've invested a tremendous amount in a few individuals, and you can be selective. You graduate a certain number, you send a small person, at least not the whole number, to sensitive areas. I could see a little greater reason. And it's conceivable that these people would be a little better qualified, a little better motivated to talk freely. But you must remember that when you put somebody in there to talk to a psychiatrist, it's very, very human to conceal one's doubts shortcomings and emphasize his aspects, as we all do in periods of evaluation. But it might be more applicable there would be some better motivation, because obviously these people might be somewhat interested if they're not fouled up, say, in the beginning, and cause the church, the government, some difficulties. There would be a certainly greater motivation, and when you get to smaller groups and more specialized areas, it becomes a little better. But it's not infallible. One issue I've got to tell you this.
The Navy sent out something that, I
don't offer this for fact. But just something to say to them. But it's not too doggone important why individuals do something. That is, the Navy's had a good deal of experience in the NIC. And that's a pretty stressful situation. And they always have that feeling, everybody that goes through the NIC, don't say that. A few times. And apparently it's sort of become to the old commands in Navy capacity. They sort of concluded, without scientific proof at all, God goes to Antarctic because he can't stand his nagging wife, and this is a lovely chance to get away from her for 6 months. Or he goes down there because he has a burning interest and desire in the geophysical conditions of the South Pole. This is so important if it's been felt. It's because he wants to go. That is, if you go to medical, you may go to medical school because, you know, the hometown doctors are the cataract, or you may go because you always wanted to, for all your life, to be an eye surgeon. But it's conceivable that both could be as good, or the one with the basic motivation might be a better job. This doesn't run very contrary to what we've always thought, because a lot of things we've always thought haven't been wrong. And Galileo, you know, jumped into that problem. But this thing has come up, and you don't read too much about this note. Everybody wants you to write, why do I want to go to medical school in 25 words or less? As if it made some difference, you know? And I don't say it's a more important motivation, but it is sometimes over-emphasizing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. that these people have not been allowed to go by the shortcuts at 5 and 10, they wouldn't be going by the shortcuts now. And instead of cheating on the examination, they were studying for the examination. But somewhere along the line, they didn't have to do that. They were allowed to get a coordinated shortcut, and they got by with it. And every time they got by with it, they reinforced the judge or the desire chemically to do it again. So that examination day comes around, and they have not done any work, and they make a payment. And because they have this is a habit pattern that was set up earlier, they're in trouble if they pass. They're in trouble if they're in trouble if they aren't caught eventually. This is probably the most preventable of them all, but it's also the one that's most secondary to what we want to call human failing. Theoretically, it's probably the individual beliefs of a therapist are not, is no attempt to be made to impose these on the patient. This is helpful in deep therapy. This is not, when I speak of this, I'm speaking to the patient for a good while, more than once a week and longer than a few months. Because if you're in the less intense situation, you don't get this transference to become developed as intensely as you do in the more intense, in the more prolonged and frequent treatment. In those instances, the people who do it, the analysts and analytical therapists, really go all out not to impose their values on the patient. And they won't tell the patients whether they're married or not. They oftentimes don't tell the patients that, or they will not tell the patient their religion. They will not divulge any of this type of information. And I'll give them credit, although I don't belong to the, I'm not in the inner circle. I think they do a middling fair job of that. And it's not as easy as it sounds. But they maintain a pretty neutral attitude. And they sometimes criticize the world. Because a patient in psychotherapy may conceivably talk about having an abortion, an illegal procedure, criminal procedure. They may not take quite as strong a stand against it on these same grounds. Now, by chance, they might, most of them will, but they go all out not to seek to impose their values. Now, obviously, they remain human, so you can never be 100% successful. But this one, by and large, in most situations, where intensive therapy is carried on, they do as credible a job as that as you could expect of a mortal. Now, in other types of therapy, where it's a little more directly, that's different. You may well find things that you feel in your own value system, could be changed and encourage the patient. And you let it be known by your very concern about it, but where you stand on this matter. And an individual who perhaps has sexual drive, both hetero and homo, a doctor may well choose to encourage the heterosexual ones and try to suppress the homosexual ones. But this woman is imposing his own value system, and this could occur. It certainly does occur sometimes, where there seems to be reason to feel it would succeed. By and large, I don't think you have to worry a whole lot about a good psychotherapist's religion. I mean, what particular denomination or lack of denomination you may have. Because the practice that I have known handles this very carefully. They rarely monkey with this particular facet. As long as the thing is not an illness in itself, some people can that will utilize parts of their religion to support their own illness. And this sometimes, I think, is a misunderstanding that lies between clergy and psychiatrists. There'll be individuals whose scrupulousness will be nothing more than signs of obsessive compulsive neuroses, and yet they will use a theological framework to explain this. And if you to help them at all, this somehow must be modified. But by and large, this chapter is a pretty fair job of not thinking if the conscious recognizes the value of these beliefs, that by and large they're very deep seated to begin with. That is, they date back to very early childhood. I would presume that most psychiatrists would raise a higher eye at somebody who changed and asserted than would other people. They'd wonder why. And they would wonder what happened in the parental relationship that that was about. Practically. I'm not really interested in making everybody fit into it. This gets down pretty much to my personal philosophy, really, in this question. Of everybody fitting into a behavior mold, there's some tendency in the country for this. Most of the people who, with their own discomfort, are something obviously amiss. The obvious answer to the question. Now, the summary one, I think if you go searching for them, you're going to show a second hand thing. You get everybody concerned about everything. The things that usually a student refers them to psychiatrists are either one, some obvious behavioral problem, the police catch them shooting 4 times, or they throw beer cans out the window, or they make 4 D's last semester, and when they have, you know, the faculty knows they were able to make B's or A's. These are the usual things that get a student there. Or they express some unusual thought or something that is not particularly understandable to a faculty member, implying they want help. If a student comes to you with something you consider bizarre, thinking wise or acting wise, he complies, he wants to, he thinks for a few maybe, and he'd like to know what he can do about it. But as far as any specific criteria, people who get depressed are probably ought to be seen. People that really seem to be quite unhappy over prolonged periods of time without apparent reason, or even with what seems like a fair but certainly inadequate reason. Who don't eat and lose weight and don't sleep at night and think they're out of balance. I think this is pertinent too, but in the parish, these same people oftentimes feel that they have committed some terrible, unforgivable sin, and they're convinced they're the son of the earth. And this is a depression. And these people ought to be seen by a psychiatrist. They may not always be, you know, may turn out to be much milder than this. But those that group should be seen. Anybody who, with any consistency, or with any real belief in it, sees visions of his voices could be seen. There may be nothing to it. You don't all have to, there doesn't have to be something wrong with all of them, but they should be evaluated if you're taking notes to evaluate. Those who seem to have what I call self-destructive or self-defeating habits, some chapter might have to say touch his book 10 times, the very ritualistic procedures that seem to interfere with daily activities, should be evaluated. if they feel the most like to do in a society feels in a sense. Obviously people that get into trouble with the law usually are evaluated one way or another by necessity rather than sense. That's about as good, I suppose. I can't give you a very good answer to the question.
I think we all have some knowledge to start with. I mean, every man you meet, you try as you must. Yeah, I mean, if you see that, he's all out, if you see that, he's still there. And so 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years of living gives an individual a certain criteria. Sometimes people will come to you, but socially surprised. They would be surprised, and if you know them personally, that they would have trouble. As the entity question, who should do it? It's a real loaded question with doctors, and if that a situation comes into this, I don't personally feel it bothers me a whole lot. Until I get mad at some social worker, you know. And then instead of being just mad at the doctor, as I might be, if the doctor had made this mistake, you can charge that word, you know, you can really have it on. But by and large, social workers, counseling ministers, this can be done. There's no doubt about it. And probably it's going to have to be done. There's too many people in this world with trouble. That to provide a psychiatrist for each of them would probably cost the facilities of Kansas to feed them, because it isn't practical in the first place, it isn't necessary in the second place. Each of these people should have some problem to be a psychiatrist. It's totally impossible, other than just see them and say hello, which is worth it. So I think that. Yes, that those people who plan to do this, as in most fields, it's better than a container. It's certainly nice to have at least a skeleton presentation to these people of what the most serious illnesses are, so they can be recognized and possibly referred. And it certainly is very helpful to have some training so that the individual therapist, be he counselor, social case worker, which is what they call social workers to do psychotherapy, by the way. Psychologists, psychiatrists, general practitioners, psychologists. There's no bounds on this word at all. It's gotten to be a sort of a catch word in psychiatry, but it's been practiced since time immemorial by all sorts of people. That is, the children and all that sort of thing. It's nothing really new in concept, or maybe new techniques. So I think that this can, by necessity, probably will be done. You'll be sought after this. You better be able to respond to some degree, or you lose a little bit of faith, or maybe a lot, because the ministry has the status of his own. And he is expected to perform a certain number of things that seem to be beyond the nature.